Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 77th episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. I know you're probably right now in the middle of your winter break, your holiday break, and glad you could join us for this episode of Edu All-Stars. We really appreciate any feedback you'd like to leave or any comments on the website on any of the different show notes that we have available up there. We would certainly appreciate that.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars. We love seeing the conversations and hearing about all the different things that stick out to you. We are really excited about this week's guest. We have Jeff Charbonneau. Did I say that right, Jeff?
Yes, you did.
Who is the 2013 National Teacher of the Year and currently teaching chemistry, physics, and engineering at Zilla High School in Washington State. Jeff, thanks for coming on with us today.
Boy, thank you so much. Pleasure to be here. You know, the best part for me is it's actually still the afternoon, a little bit later for you guys, but I appreciate it.
So, Jeff, the place we always like to start is to hear a little bit about your journey into education and how you became a teacher. So tell us about that.
Sure thing. You know, so I actually graduated from Zilla High School in 1996, the same school I'm teaching at now, and I said what everybody says, there's no way I am ever coming back here. We all say that coming out of high school, especially because we're a really small rural school. We're only about 400 students in the high school. The entire district's only about 1,300 students. So I graduated, said I'm not coming back. Went up to a place called Central Washington University and was actually majoring in pre-med. And it was about halfway through my sophomore year. I was signed up very selfishly with the Kittitas Valley Community Hospital to do some community service. I say selfishly because to get into med school, you got to have community service. And the dean of the university came to me and said, hey, this is great, you're doing the work at the hospital, but we could also use you because there's a couple of boys that need some tutoring in biology, and they're with the alternative high school in town. And I was thinking about my med school application again and said, okay, I'll go do some more community service. And you know, there is something strange that happens to you. When you sit down with a student, with a young person, and you explain something and they get it for the first time, and they see what's possible, that becomes really, really, really addicting as a person to watch that happen. So the next thing you know, I started worrying more about my next tutoring session with these students and skipping time at the hospital. And so finally I said, this is ridiculous. I love teaching more. I'm going to switch majors, and I've never looked back. That was about 15 years ago or so. I graduated college. I was looking for a job. And, of course, Zilla High School had an opening. So here I am in my 14th year teaching, all at Zilla High School.
Wow.
It's funny, out of the 75 episodes that we've done, I guess 77 now, we've had, I would say, at least four people that were pre-med and then went back into education. And it's interesting that to kind of see that. So let's jump right into national teaching.
I've got to comment on that because, you know, working at the hospital, you realize – people that go to the hospital don't want to be there, right? And so you're always around this negativity. So I figured I'd go into something where people always wanted to be there, so I became a teacher. I realized, oh, wait a minute, maybe the students don't always want to be there either. So there's some parity there. There's definitely
parity. Let's jump right into the National Teacher of the Year. I just wanted to – the National Teacher of the Year, man, we've got some Teachers of the Year on and Teachers of the State and all that, but National Teacher of the Year is pretty amazing. Like, can you talk us through kind of that whole experience?
You know, I'm still trying to process the whole thing, to be honest with you, but I received the Washington State Teacher of the Year for 2013. All the Teachers of the Year for each of the states, there's actually 54 of them because we include the U.S. territories and the Department of Defense. All 54 then go into the national competition to select one National Teacher of the Year. That person gets named in April of the year, so I was named in April 2013. And then the next year, last school year, I was actually out of the classroom for a year. Spent that time serving as kind of a pseudo-ambassador for education. Went to 34 different states, 5 different countries, and racked up over 500,000 frequent flyer miles. So it was an unbelievable experience. I got to see some classrooms around the nation that, I got to tell you, were just doing phenomenal things. I got to see kids in different places doing things from Google Hangouts to Mystery Skypes to assembling their own cars. I mean, it was just amazing what's happening in this nation. So for me, it's one of those experiences that every teacher deserves to have. I'm, you know, a lot of people mistake the National Teacher of the Year. They think it's the best teacher in the nation. It's not. We're all great teachers. I just happened to be one that was pretty lucky and got recognized. So now I'm working to make sure that other teachers get recognized just as much.
Cool.
Now, this last year, you also got to be the closing keynote speaker at ISTE.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy and pretty incredible. What was that experience like? I mean, were you terrified out of your mind?
You know, I think the National Teacher of the Year experience kind of helped me out. By the time I got to ISTE, I think that was my, 160, 170th presentation, something like that. You know, so after a while, you kind of get used to the crowds and things. But ISTE is kind of a dream come true. I was like a kid in a candy store walking around that place, you know. Getting to meet Bill Bellamy backstage, meeting with so many of these other outstanding educators. You know, there's just some great, great folks that are out there. And rubbing shoulders with those folks was pretty amazing. Now, I'll say this, though. You go to a place like ISTE, you're going to be nothing but impressed. It's not really a conference. It's much more of a giant hangout with folks that are equally engaged. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So what is your favorite part about being a teacher?
I think it's the idea that we get to push students, right? We get to push them to see their potential. So I get the privilege of teaching chemistry, physics, and engineering. And every class that I teach actually counts for college credit. So I've made agreements with Central Washington University and Eastern Washington University in order to articulate our courses for college credit. Now, there's nothing that screams to a teenager, boy, I want to take that class, like saying, you're going to take this and learn about quantum mechanics. You know, I know all of us as teenagers were just begging to learn about quantum mechanics, right? Or not. So what I love is taking a subject like that that seems so foreign, seems so out there to kids, and making them realize it's really not that hard. You know, I firmly believe there's nothing in life that's truly difficult. It may be 10,000 steps long, but each individual step is actually pretty easy. And the hard part is learning how to stick with something. So that's what I love about teaching. I get to show kids that you can take very complex things and break them down into simple pieces. Now, the bad part about that is that I got to put my practice where my mouth is. You know, if I'm going to expect my students to know and do more, then I better do the same thing. So my degree is actually in biology, but I teach chemistry, physics, and engineering. I did my national board certification in chemistry, not in biology. You know, and so I'm trying to show students through my own actions that, hey, if I'm going to ask you to work hard, I'm going to do the same thing. You know, so I think that's the great part about it. You stay busy. You keep pushing yourself, you keep pushing kids, and you have a good time with it.
Now, I got to say, you told us at the beginning that you were doing this show from your classroom today. What are all those pictures around the top of your classroom that I see?
Sure, here, let me pick you up here and move you around just a little bit. So, at my school, we don't actually sign yearbooks at the end of the year. Instead, what we do is many of the students will take their senior photographs and will write different sayings on them. And then give them to either friends or teachers or otherwise. So my career starts up over here in this corner, and it kind of wraps itself around the room to the other side. So
super cool.
Wow.
I tell kids, you know, they ask me a lot, what am I going to do when I get all the way around the room? And I say, well, that's when I retire. so you may notice, actually, that the newer pictures are actually getting bigger and bigger. And I think the reason for that is the kids are kind of giving me a hint. It's like okay, I'll give you a poster, we'll get you closer to retirement.
That's hilarious.
I love that.
So how do you motivate those kids that are just maybe unmotivated?
You know, the students that are unmotivated sometimes are the best students out there, to be honest. They're ones that, you know, have really got a good understanding of the concepts, and they're just bored. So you got to look at them and see what it is that they're interested in. You know, I've had a lot of students over the years that were interested in BMX racing or in video games or the rest. So that means I've got to do my research. I went out and bought an Xbox One so that I could figure out what the Halo Master Chief Collection was all about. I'm playing through Destiny right now just so I can communicate with my kids about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've got to research my students just as much as I ask them to research my classes. You know, and that takes time, and it is an investment. But if I can talk on their language, you know, if I know what it means to have 150 frags in a game, which is, you know, kills in a video game, for those of you that aren't playing them, you know, if I know what that language is, then I can reach them on a different level. I had a young lady who is really big into motocross racing. but she's a little bit shorter. And the pedals, the pegs on her bike were in the wrong place. Well, we're teaching engineering. I looked at her and I said, so why don't we just make you some new pegs? She goes, we can do that? I'm like, yeah, of course we can do that. We've got all the materials here. So it's about finding what they care about and linking it to that. And then people say, oh, well, that's great for some subjects. Maybe engineering, that's easier. But what about the hard stuff? And I'm like, well, guys, I teach chemistry. Chemistry and brain isn't always on the same level there for what's relevant to my life. So let's start talking about things that are relevant. Let's break down some of these energy drinks. Let's break down what's actually in those and why it's, you know, not very healthy for you to consume those. Let's talk about something as simple as all these water bottles that are running around. Where does that water come from? How do we treat it? And if you start talking about it on that level, sometimes it helps. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not successful with every single kid. I'm just not. Mm-hmm. And no one's going to be. You know, I talk to a lot of beginning teachers, and I tell them, you know, it's not my job to reach every single student. And at first, people really push back on that. And I say, you know, it's not my job to reach every student. It's my job to make sure that every student gets reached. And there is a difference. There will be some students that come through that, because of personality differences, because of whatever's going on in their life, won't make a connection with me. And that's okay. I just have to make sure they make a connection with the teacher next door, or the teacher down the hall, or somebody else on campus. I have to make sure that I connect them to somebody. Next thing you know, you do that, those motivated kids, or those unmotivated kids, start making a comeback.
Love that. So what's a book that you're reading right now, or one of your favorite books that you've read that you would recommend to someone else?
You know, we got to take it on two different levels. So we've got education books that I read through. You know, definitely was just reading through Rafe Esquay's Teach With Your Hair on Fire, reading through that for the second time. You know, there's a lot of other great teaching books out there. Still my personal favorite, if I think back to my undergraduate times, you know, was reading through Parker Palmer's works, The Courage to Teach. You know, that's always very inspirational to me. But I'm also a big-time nerd, and so what I really am fascinated by is quantum mechanics of the early 1900s. So I've read through a lot about maybe Schrodinger or some of the other scientists that are out there. The one that happens to be on my table right now was recommended to me by another teacher, is the story of Copenhagen, which is a city in Europe where many of these different scientists came together. So you got to answer that on two levels. I think it's important for teachers to always be reading about pedagogy and education philosophy and things like that. And then you also got to be reading about something about content, you know, something that's going to keep you going in that realm too.
Yeah, definitely. So, Jeff, who inspires you? And I'm not going to let you say the students. Anyone else? Who inspires you professionally?
Sure. You know, a lot of folks. A lot of folks inspire me. I think probably the most influential person I've ever had in my career was the teacher I hated the most, to be totally honest with you. Louise Adams was my 7th and 8th grade language arts teacher, and she knows that I tell this story. I hated her, and hate is a really strong word that you shouldn't use, but I tell you what, this is about the instance where you'd use it. She called my dad every Friday, every single Friday, and told him what I wasn't doing. Okay, and I wasn't doing stuff. I mean, it was my fault, but I saw it as she was getting me in trouble, and if only she would stop making the phone calls, everything would be okay. And if it wasn't for her tenacity, if it wasn't for her willing to be my teacher rather than my friend, I wouldn't be talking to you guys today. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't be anywhere in my career without that push that she gave me. And so I think sometimes we think as teachers, you know, how are we going to make the students like me? How are we going to make sure that everybody around me is going well? We need to remember that our job is to be teachers, not necessarily friends. Can you be friendly while you're doing that? Absolutely, and I have a lot of fun with my students. But at the same time, you got to make sure that your role as teacher is always there. Right. So she's definitely an inspiration of mine. And then on top of that, I'm also a big baseball fan. I used to coach baseball here. Cal Ripken Jr. is an all-time favorite of mine. He broke Lou Gehrig's record of consecutive games played. And to me, what that means is that tenacity. Getting in, going into work every single day, you know, I mean, granted, if you're sick, you should stay home to not spread it, but getting in there and doing the work that needs to be done day after day after day after day. I think those are the messages that we need to be able to communicate to our students. You know, I talk to a lot of employers now, and a lot of the employers are looking for the soft skills. Are you going to show up on time? Can I rely on you to be at work? Those types of things. And I think the world could use a few more Cal Ripken juniors out there.
So what do you do to recenter yourself when you've had a really rough day?
Oh, boy. You know, one of the things I tell some folks is don't try to copy me. Because I don't say no to a whole lot of things. You know, here at Zilla, you know, I teach chemistry, physics, and engineering. Actually, this year, just until noon each day. At noon, my role switches, and I become the STEM coordinator for two counties of my state, for the entire South Central region. I do that until 5 p.m. But I'm also still the yearbook advisor. I'm the junior class advisor. I have a robotics program that I run. We have an outdoor summer and hiking program that I do as well. So I'm a really bad example of how not to, you know, sign up for too many things and whatnot. So there's many, many, many times I'm a little stressed out, you know, by the time I get home. Mm-hmm. Fortunately enough, my son Andrew is in second grade. My daughter Mikhail is a preschooler, and they know exactly how to put me in my place. So, you know, spending that 25 minutes on the floor playing with dolls and tea parties, doing a lightsaber battle with my son, you know, all those kinds of things brings you right back to reality.
Cool. What is one of the biggest things that you find that could be like a challenge in education right now?
Yeah, motivation's a big one. You know, as I went around the country and even went over to a couple of places overseas, teachers are looking for a place to get motivated. We're looking for a place to understand our importance in the grander scheme of maybe education reform movements or whatever you want to call it. And when I talk with a lot of lawmakers, I try to remind them that it's really, really important that we talk about education reform in terms of we're actually doing a lot better than we used to do. We just need to continue to get better. And that part gets lost in that translation. And I think the hard part about education right now is not shouldering the blame as a teacher. You know, we're not saying that teachers are doing a bad job, in my opinion. I think teachers are doing a great job. We just need to continue pushing it forward. And so I think the hard part of education right now is finding that motivating factor. You know, when I was a kid, I remember on TV commercials and even TV shows where the teacher was still pretty with it. The teacher understood what was going on. And now when I watch a lot of shows, the teacher is the bumbling buffoon, the kids know more than the teacher, and that's not a great message out there. So I think we need to do a little bit better job of lifting ourselves up a little. I think that would help out quite a bit. Some other big challenges, keeping up with tech. You know, I'm a pretty techie guy. I really enjoy technology. I've got a 3D printer in my classroom. We do laser cutting. We do plasma cams. You know, all this kind of stuff. I do a partial flip in my classroom where I'm videotaping lessons. All the stuff that you hear about. But that takes time. And it takes an awful lot of time and people wanting to spend their time that way. How are we going to frame professional development so that teachers can get their hands a little bit dirty with technology? How are we going to give them the time to test out all these different things? You know, whether or not you're going to use Edmodo, or you're going to use Google Classroom, or you're going to use a Microsoft SharePoint, you know, to make these things happen. We have to restructure our professional development hours in order to give teachers that kind of time. That's a big challenge right now.
So what has been the biggest thing that you've learned in the last year or so since becoming National Teacher of the Year?
Boy. You can't do it all. You know, you can't save the world.
Sounds like you're trying, though.
I am trying, you know, and it goes back to that, you know, that parable of the starfish. You know, the starfish, the sand dollars wash up on the beach, and you're trying to throw them back. At least I can save this one. You know, so I think, you know, you need to always try, but you also need to be a little bit, realistic in your expectations. I like to tell people I'm a realistic optimist. You know, I'm going to be optimistic about these things. I'm going to try and be real about it at the same time. But you can't do it all. You know, I'm trying to have an impact locally, regionally, and still on the national level. This next week, I'm actually flying to Arizona. Fly there and back, down one day, back the next, to do a conference. And that means that my students are going to miss me for 2 days. So how do I structure that? How do I make sure that their education is not being downplayed because I'm going to be out of the classroom? You know, there's ways, obviously, with flipping and whatnot that we can help with that. But you can't get it all done. You know, the other thing that I learned is that there's so many great teachers out there, so many of them. We've got about 3.5 million public education teachers in the United States. and the vast majority of them are doing what we are on a Sunday. We're thinking about education. We're trying to better the profession. We're trying to better our classrooms. You know, so one of the big things that I wish people could see is the trip that I went on last year, where I saw quality education happening across America. I think we're in a much better place than we are giving ourselves credit for.
Cool. If you could go back to like the beginning of your career and give yourself a piece of advice, what would that advice be?
Do we have an hour and a half for this? You know, lots of things. I still remember very clearly. I was in about my third week teaching, and a young man asked to go to the bathroom, and I said, can you just wait a few minutes? You know, we're just about done with the notes. And he used some verbiage that was inappropriate for a classroom, and I kicked him out of the room because that's what I thought you were supposed to do. And that was about the worst thing I could have done with that particular kid. That was the last time, about 14 years ago, that I've ever kicked a student out of the room. Because I was in a frame of mind as a beginning teacher that I am the teacher and everything centers around me. And I didn't stop to think about what was happening in this kid's life at that moment. Why in the world would something that simple set him off? You know, there had to be something else going on in his life. And I basically said, I'm not capable of helping you get out of my room. And to me, that was a giant, giant mistake. So my big advice to beginning teachers is to realize it's not about you. It's about your students and the life that they're involved in. You know, I don't know about you guys, but when I was a teenager, last thing I was thinking about is what the teacher was saying. I was thinking about my friends in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about the boyfriends and girlfriend problems that my friends were having. I was thinking about the young lady who, as a junior, I asked out to prom, and I eventually married her. My wife and I were high school sweethearts. Yeah, I was thinking about all of that other stuff. And when I walked in the classroom, the teacher's job was trying to get me to think about chemistry, physics, or English, or whatever. We got to remember that our students are in a different place. So when my students act out in class, because it happens. I mean, it does happen. A student has a bad day. I don't send them to the office. I'm fortunate enough, I actually have a laboratory room attached to my classroom. I take them in the lab for a quick second, and the first thing I say is, okay, let me have it. And I literally mean, let me have it. I let them swear at me. I let them get it all off their chest. And 99 times out of 100, within about 2 or 3 minutes, the student lets it all out. They apologize. And I find out what's really wrong. And it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with something else in their lives. That's what we need to do as teachers. We need to remember that it's not about us. You know, and suddenly your discipline issues go away because you're able to relate to these students on another level. And you're able to get them the services that they need. You know, I found out a lot of things about these students that I was not qualified to help with. But I was able to get them to a counselor. I was able to get them to social services to help deal with these issues that would have never been found out any other way. Mm-hmm. So beginning teachers, beginning me, take the job seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously. It's not all about you.
Great advice.
I love that. So, Jeff, the one thing we always like to end on with our guests is asking them, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
You know, I think STEM education is pretty passionate to me, and a lot of people take that to say, oh, wait, don't forget about the A for the arts and turn it into STEAM. I was at the NEA convention 2 years ago, and I said, well, maybe it's not even STEAM, maybe it's a stream of knowledge, because reading is still kind of important, you know. So when I say STEM, I don't mean just science, technology, engineering, and math. I mean using all of your skills and all of your resources to solve problems. And I think that's what education should be about again. And when I say all skills and all resources to solve problems, I do mean all. You've got to understand history. You've got to understand the arts. You've got to understand the liberal arts. You've got to understand, of course, chemistry and physics and all the rest. But you can just use it to solve problems. So I'm really passionate about how we can do a better job of bringing the subjects back together again. So that when you walk into a room, you don't have two factions, one side screaming for the arts and one side screaming for the sciences. I want both of them screaming for the same thing, and that's for kids again. You know, so I'm really passionate about bringing together teachers again, be a lot more collaborative in our efforts, and go from there. Specific toys, 3D printers are a blast, laser cutters are a lot of fun. What do we do with them to teach with them? I have a robotics group. It is one thing to build a robot. It's another thing to learn about robotics. We need to make sure that we're very intentional about how we're using these tools when we're doing these collaborative projects, that we don't forget about the learning behind it. So that's what I'm interested in right now, doing multidisciplinary projects that still have high quality content behind them.
Yeah, fantastic. So Jeff, how can listeners connect with you if they want to get a hold of you?
Certainly, you know, definitely on Twitter. I'm just at Jeff Charbonneau, Charbonneau, CHARBONNEAU. So definitely follow me on there. Hit me up on Facebook as well. And you can also send me an email, jeff.charbonneau@zillaschools.org.
Appreciate it.
Any way I can connect with you and help out, please let me know.
Yeah, appreciate you taking time to go down to your campus this evening and spending some time with us. Definitely. So ways you can connect with us on Twitter, you can find us at EduAllStarsHQ. You can also reach our website at EduAllStars.com, where you've got the other 77 episodes we've done. In iTunes, you can also search out EduAllStars with no spaces and find all those episodes as well.
And join us for our next episode as we interview Heatherly Chambers. So thanks, Jeff, again for coming on with us. We really appreciate it. It was great getting to hear from you.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
You too.
Thanks.